Mary Magdalene is considered to be a saint by the Catholic, Eastern Orthodox, Anglican, and Lutheran churches. According to the Gospel, she was cleansed of 7 demons and became a witness of the crucifixion, burial, and resurrection of Jesus. Known in some Christian traditions as the Apostle of the Apostles, Mary Magdalene is a central figure in later Gnostic Christian writings such as the Gospel of Thomas, which I've already covered in several prior videos. These texts portray Mary Magdalene as Jesus' closest and most beloved disciple, and the only one who truly understood his teachings. While mainstream historians conclude that her portrayal as a prostitute began in 591 with Pope Gregory, if one were to conduct an objective research into Mary, many unusual links would likely be found to other feminine divinities of the past. It's almost as if Mary Magdalene, throughout the ages, has become a focal point for the lost goddesses and their presence in our lives. Despite the confusion about her status as a prostitute, there's a link in this to ancient sex ceremonies and sacred marriage, which in this context did not involve any payment, but were mystical rites consisting of carnal acts performed by a king and high priestess who were believed to be an incarnation of the great goddess Inanna or Ishtar, the queen of heaven, who was thought to descend to earth for this special occasion. Ritualistic sacred marriages were celebrated in numerous variations across the world's cultures. In ancient Egypt, the rites were performed in temples dedicated to the goddess Isis and her consort, the god Osiris. In Jewish esoteric tradition, such as the Kabbalah, sacred marriage was seen as an expression of the union between the archetypal masculine, or soul, and the archetypal feminine, or wisdom, aspects of God. Similar to the concepts of yin and yang in Taoism, the tantric tradition of Hinduism views the union of God, or Shiva, and goddess, Shakti, as a representation of a divine whole, with alchemical roots that likely go back into prehistoric times. The stories of the resurrection of the young king in the presence of a goddess, which seems so unique to Mary, have been previously recounted ages ago in ancient Sumer, Babylon, and Egypt, with the goddess as a central part of the resurrection itself. These stories were perpetrated for millennia and eventually reappear in a slightly different form in the Bible. While this statement will undoubtedly be considered blasphemous by some modern-day Christians, there can also be no doubt that much older versions of the same storylines were included in the Bible, but without the female component which had been previously featured in a much more prominent way in original versions. According to Sumerian stories, Inanna was the daughter of the gods An and Enki, connected to the Tree of Life and the resurrection stories several hundreds of years before the biblical Genesis was written. Hymns to Inanna, which also speak to an ancient deluge, were written at least 500 years before Abraham was born, and the worship of this goddess can be dated back at least 5,500 years ago. For the ancient Mesopotamians, as a goddess, Inanna, or Ishtar, was a unifying force between all deities and transcended the modern academic debate between monotheism and polytheism. She was all, connecting heaven and earth, and represented the same light that emanates from the sun and the stars, as well as from the flame of a single candle. In fact, she was both light and darkness, embodying the attributes of both. Keeping in mind that in an alchemical or Kabbalistic context, darkness predates light, literally giving birth to the light. And it's for this reason many goddess depictions are black, from the Knights Templar reverence for the Black Madonna that they introduced into Europe, or the Black goddess Kali in India, which brings us to the misunderstood origins of the name for my state, California. In the 16th century, when Spanish explorers first discovered the Baja California Peninsula west of the Sea of Cortez, they believed the peninsula to be a large island. The name California was applied to the supposed island, the region now known as Mexican Baja California, and eventually to the modern state of California, which obviously turned out not to be an island at all. There are several origins that have been suggested for the word California, including Spanish, Portuguese, Latin, and Native American origins, with all of them being disputed. Probably the most accepted version comes from a popular novel of the time, Las Zergas de Esplandian, a Spanish romance novel published around the year 1500, which tells the story of California as the name given to a mythical island populated only by Amazon warriors who used gold tools and weapons. A short excerpt from the book says that, and I quote, "Know that on the right hand of the Indies exists an island called California, very close to the side of the earthly paradise, and it was populated by black women, without any men existing there, because they lived in the way of the Amazons. They had beautiful and robust bodies, and were brave and very strong. Their island was the strongest of the world, with its steep cliffs and rocky shores. Their weapons were golden, and so were the harness of the wild beasts that they were accustomed to taming, so that they could be ridden, because there was no other metal in the island than gold." End quote. Their queen of a unique race who ruled over the island and its inhabitants was named Calafia, which some historians believe was inspired by the Arabic word caliph, or ruler. This sounds plausible, as at the time, portions of Spain were ruled by the Moors, who were Muslim, from North Africa from 757 to 1492. The novel describes an island very closely resembling a sort of Garden of Eden that was full of gold and was also populated by griffins, a mythical lion-eagle hybrid which the women kept as pets. Any man who found his way onto the island was killed and fed to these griffins. Another excerpt from the novel follows, and I quote, "On this island called California, there were many griffins, and in the time that they had young, these women would take them to their caves and there raise them, and they fattened them on those men and the boys that they had born. Any man that entered the island was killed and eaten by them. There ruled on the island of California a queen great of body, very beautiful for her race, at a flourishing age, desirous in her thoughts of achieving great things, valiant in strength, cunning in her brave heart, more than any other who had ruled that kingdom before her, Queen Calafia." This description of Calafia, her people, and her country was based on many centuries of stories of Amazons, groups of female warriors featured in a number of ancient epic poems and legends, such as the Labors of Hercules, the Argonautica, and the Iliad. In mythology, they matched men in physical agility and strength, in archery, riding skills, and the arts of combat. For a long time, modern scholars believed that the Amazons were little more than a figment of ancient imaginations. These fierce warrior women of ancient Greek lore allegedly sparred with Hercules, lived in lesbian matriarchies, and were often depicted with one breast exposed. But a growing body of archaeological evidence shows that legends about the horseback riding, bow-wielding female fighters were almost certainly rooted in reality, confirming that there really were groups of nomadic women who trained, hunted, and battled alongside their male counterparts on the Eurasian steppe. A recent landmark discovery by archaeologists unearthed the remains of four female warriors buried with a cache of arrowheads, spears, and horseback riding equipment in a tomb in western Russia, right where ancient Greek stories place the Amazons. Jacques de Vitry, a bishop and a historian of the Crusades, wrote about Amazons who fought that were stronger than men because their vitality was not, quote, consumed in frequent copulation. In any event, the team from the Institute of Archaeology at the Russian Academy of Sciences identified the women as Scythian nomads who were interred at a burial site some 2,500 years ago. The women ranged in age from early teens to late 40s, with the eldest of the women found wearing a golden ceremonial headdress. With swastikas also a common artifact found among Scythians and ancient Aryans in general. The etymology of the name Amazon is still undecided, with European enthusiasts deriving the name from the Greek muse and Berberists linking it with the Amazigh. The Berbers, or Amazigh as they refer to themselves, are the natives of North Africa, where we find Egypt, which the ancient Egyptians called Kemet, literally meaning the black land. While some scholars believe this refers to the color of the rich black agricultural soil by the Nile, secret societies, mystery school religions, and students of alchemy associate the color black with the ancient esoteric goddess religion. It certainly has nothing to do with skin color, as North Africa, which should more accurately be called Southern Mediterranean, as seafaring populations ruled the ancient world, has been settled by Cro-Magnon for some 30,000 years, of which the Berbers are their direct descendants. That said, they share genetic affinities with the Guanches, who also are considered direct descendants of Cro-Magnon, the native aborigines of the West African Canary Islands, who are tall, fair-haired, and despite not having boats or medals on the island, also left small stone pyramids and red-headed and blonde mummies. Here's a statue of a Guanche queen erected on the Canary Islands, whose women were also described as Amazonian and fierce fighters. Berber is a derogatory term which is similar to barbarian, as barbar means bearded in Latin, the language of the Roman Empire, which called them that. In actuality, they were part of the Aryan opposition which eventually conquered Rome, whose ancient ancestors were known as Solutrians, based on their bifacial stone tool technology, which is remarkably similar to Clovis bifacial spear and arrow tips found in the New World, with recent archaeological and genetic evidence pushing back the peopling of the Americas 30,000 years into the range of Cro-Magnon. It is now clear that many of the tribes that were exterminated by recent European disease 500 years ago shared genetic affinities with the Guanches, Basque, Berbers, which are all various tribes of fair-skinned Caucasians. That said, when encountering natives in the New World, Spanish explorers were occasionally told of a tribe composed entirely of women. One such tale was related to Cortez about a group of Amazons supposedly living in a province called Kigaton. Juan de Grijalva was told of Amazons during his 1518 expedition through the Tabasco region of Mexico. Nuno de Guzman followed tales of a nation of women who lived in riches on or near the sea, women that used bows and arrows, with whiter skin, who were referred to as goddesses by the natives. Could there really have been truth to the legends of an ancient Amazonian queen, or at the very least, a widely distributed tribe that venerated the ancient noble goddess? In mythology, the Greek underworld is an other world where souls go after death. The original Greek idea of afterlife is that at the moment of death, the soul is separated from the corpse, taking on the shape of the former person, and is transported to the entrance of the underworld. The underworld itself, sometimes known as Hades, is considered the dark counterpart to the brightness of Mount Olympus, with the kingdom of the dead corresponding to the kingdom of the gods. a realm invisible to the living, made solely for the dead. According to Greek mythology, Persephone, daughter of Zeus, is the queen of the underworld. During the 6 months that Persephone spent in the underworld, her mother was sad and not in the mood to deal with the harvest. Thus, she would leave the earth to decline. These were the months of autumn and winter, when the land is not fertile and does not give crops. Whenever Persephone went to Olympus to live during the spring and summer, the land would become fertile again and fruitful. Therefore, one aspect of the myth was created to explain the change of the seasons and the eternal cycle of nature's death and rebirth. Hel, spelled H-E-L, means hidden, and was the Old Norse underworld goddess that ruled over the identically named Hel, the place where many of the dead were said to dwell. Allatu is an underworld goddess that was worshipped by the Carthaginians. Carthage was the center or capital city of the ancient Carthaginian civilization on the eastern side of Lake Tunis in what is now Tunisia, the North African nation located in the southern Mediterranean, one of the most affluent cities of the ancient world. The religion of Carthage was a direct continuation of the Phoenicians and the ancient Canaanites that included child sacrifice. While the Phoenician pantheon was presided over by the father of the gods, Baal Hamon, a goddess was the principal figure in the Phoenician pantheon called Tanit, or Tangu, meaning the sun, but equivalent to the moon goddess Astarte, later worshipped in Roman Carthage. She was also known as Tango, meaning land of the lions, and was sometimes depicted with a lion's head. The ancient Berber people also adopted her cult, and to the ancient Egyptians, her name means land of Neith, a goddess of wisdom. In Carthage, Tanit's symbol can be found in a tophet, a name given to the place where sacrifice was conducted, and is sometimes interpreted by some academics as a woman raising her hands. Some researchers have disputed the evidence pointing to child sacrifice, with one study interpreting the Carthage tophet as a child cemetery of children that died naturally. That said, the evidence, in my estimation, becomes overwhelming when combined with ancient literary sources, such as the Bible, where accounts of child sacrifice can be compared with similar ones from Greek and Latin sources, speaking of the offering of children by fire as sacrifices in the city of Carthage. For example, Plutarch mentions the practice, as does Tertullian, Clitarchus, historian of Alexander the Great, Orosius, Philo, and Diodorus of Sicily, who wrote, quote, "In former times, the Carthaginians had been accustomed to sacrifice to this god the noblest of their sons, but more recently, secretly buying and nurturing children that had sent these to the sacrifice." According to Justin, the Latin writer who lived under the Roman Empire, the Carthaginians accepted the Persian Empire's instructions to stop sacrificing children and eating dogs. Tertullian, in about the year 200, states that although the priests who sacrificed children had been crucified by Romans, quote, "that holy crime persists in secret," end quote. Of course, sacrifice was also a custom in Mesoamerica, where the Aztecs would often perform the ritual with prisoners captured in war. The most common form of sacrifice was to open the chest of the victim and rip out their still beating hearts. Aztecs weren't the only pre-Columbian Americans that sacrificed people. Mayans did that too, as did the Inca. While this practice is no longer done in modern Mexico, the goddess Kali still receives some sacrifices from time to time in modern India, especially in remote rural provinces, with beheadings being one of the preferred methods. Many are quick to point out that the Bible denounces the practice of sacrifice, with the Vatican regarded by millions as a symbol of Christianity. But what is the ancient history of this location in Italy, and what are the origins of its name? In actuality, the Vatican is neither Latin nor Greek, and it cannot be traced to the Bible either. While the word Vatican is associated with the Church, it predates Christianity and is closely linked to the Etruscan goddess Vatica. Located in Rome, the Vatican is a symbol of the Roman Catholic faith, and as a city-state was founded on February 11, 1929, as the world's smallest independent country by both population and area, with a population of around 840 and an area of about 108 acres, but with an influence over millions of people that span the globe. Yet, as with many other Christian traditions and customs, the Vatican has a pagan origin, and about 3,000 years ago, the Etruscans settled the region of central Italy, known as Etruria, and ruled that part of the Mediterranean before the rise of Rome. While most of the Etruscan literature and mythology has been lost, we do know that they built a large cemetery on a hillside slope outside their ancient city in the area that later became the city of Rome. And the guardian of this necropolis was the Etruscan goddess Vatica, goddess of the underworld, whose duty was to keep a watching eye on those who had passed away. It seems that the Etruscan beliefs about the afterlife were similar to those of ancient Egyptians, where treatment of the deceased remains was important for survival and a successful journey to the next life. According to Etruscan mythology, Vanth was a death demon that attended from the moment of death until entry to the underworld, usually depicted with wings and had bearded snakes entwined around her arm. In addition to being goddess of the underworld, Vatica was also a bitter-tasting grape used to make wine that grew on the slope. When people ate it, they experienced hallucinations, and a word passed on into Latin as a synonym for prophetic vision. The Latin word vaticiner means foretell or prophecy, from vadis, poet, teacher, oracle. So while, according to the Catholic Encyclopedia, the origin of the name Vaticanus is uncertain, other sources claim that it comes from the ancient Etruscan language, and the Vatican Hill takes its name from the Latin word Vaticanus, alluding to the drug-induced oracles, or fortune-teller priestesses, which delivered their prophecy there in ancient times. The area, which is now St. Peter's, thus became known as Vatican Hill. Another proposed connection to the word Vatica relates to the tika, or dot, of jewelry Hindu women place on their forehead to indicate the third eye, and corresponds to the pineal gland, and also related to psychic phenomena, intuition, and the Hindu sixth chakra. In addition to melatonin, the pineal gland is thought to produce a molecule known as DMT, a powerful hallucinogen, and appears to be related to dreaming and near-death experiences. It's interesting to note that some Hindu monasteries are also called Vatica, which is used to describe a religious center. Of course, inside of these stone structures, sacred sexual union was a central part of ancient mystery religions, and it was through esoteric tantric techniques that the kundalini, or life force energy, was aroused, the pineal gland was activated, and a person could be spiritually resurrected or born again into what is allegedly described as an immortal etheric body. In the stone temples of antiquity, the goddess was not only revered as a divine entity, but through her priestesses was seen as the way or the path in which a man, especially when trained in the esoteric art of sacred marriage, could experience a direct relationship with the divine, not only by nourishing his soul for the afterlife, but through a spiritual alchemical awakening while still very much alive and fully conscious. Oh. My name is Robert Sepper. I'm an anthropologist. My published work is available on Amazon, as well as through various other major book outlets. If you'd like to support my work, you could do that through patreon.com. I appreciate it. Thank you. Please have a wonderful weekend, and I hope to see you again soon.